We're very glad to be on the line with Dr. Mads Gilbert. Dr. Gilbert is professor of medicine at the University of North Norway, specializes in anesthesiology and emergency medicine. He also provided medical support in Gaza during Israel's three-week assault in December 2008 into January the next year. He has co-authored with his colleague, Dr. Eric Fossey, the book Eyes in Gaza about Operation Cast Lead. He was also recently in Beirut, Lebanon, to take a look at some of the health issues and health effects, not only of these bombardments, but also of the economic blockade and blockade of provisions and construction materials to Gaza and the people who live there. I'm very, very glad we have this connection to Dr. Mads Gilbert today. Thank you very much for joining us and welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you so much for having me, and good afternoon, Boston. I'm in Gaza City, and I just came from the afternoon rounds at Shifa Hospital, where I have resided for the last small week during the last Israeli attack on Gaza called Operation Pillars of Defense, I guess the government of Israel called it.
Pillars of Defense. It's an interesting title for an operation, previously Cast Lead. I could see that sounds a little bit more accurate and germane to what's actually happening, throwing bullets into that occupied territory known as the Gaza Strip. Dr. Mads Gilbert, you started out doing medical relief work years ago and in a country on the other end of Israel, in Lebanon in 1982. What were you doing there then?
Well, in 1982, some of you may recall that Israel invaded Lebanon and went quickly up to West Beirut, which is the capital of Lebanon, and besieged the western part of the capital for the whole summer of 1982. And bombed it heavily from the air and from the sea and from the infantry forces surrounding the city. In addition to that, they instigated the same tactic as they have been doing on Gaza for the last 5 years and the last two military operations, which is a tactic of basically cutting all provisions to the civilian population. In Beirut in 1982, they cut the water supplies, the energy supplies, the food supplies, and they relentlessly bombed the city. I was a young anesthesiologist at that time, but I was politically active. I have always supported the Palestinian people, and I went on a solidarity medical mission organized by the Norwegian Palestine Committee to come to the support, basically, of the medical workers in West Beirut who were really standing with their backs against the wall with a large number of casualties, heavy war wounds, heavy war casualties. And it was my first very graphic meeting with the Israeli war machine, and it was quite devastating. But it was also my first meeting with a very strong and proud people who do not want to give up their struggle for independence and to have the same as all of us want to have, namely freedom and independence. So for me, that was quite a turning point. And since then, I have been strongly attached to the Palestinian cause. But there might be a little interesting footnote, because in 1967, during the 67 war, I actually volunteered to go to Israel to substitute for the people in the kibbutzes going to fight against the Arabs, as it was called then, because the narrative in Norway of Israel had always been, and what I was brought up with, was that Israel was the country, the promised land for the Jews. We had a debt to pay after the Second World War and the horrors, really the horrors of Holocaust. The narrative also was the story that this heroic little country was attacked by these dirty Arabs. That was what I was brought up with in school and at home, even if I grew up in a fairly liberal home. So So I volunteered. I went to the Israeli embassy in Oslo and said I'm willing to go. And I was checked out medically, and they said I was good to go. And a friend of my sister actually called me and said, I hear you're going to Israel. And I said, yes, of course, we have to support Israel. And she said, maybe, but maybe you should hear the story of the Palestinian people first before you leave. And so I went to her place, and she told me, she summed up within a couple of hours the background for this conflict. And I withdrew my volunteering, and I became a member of the Norwegian Palestine Committee. So I think many of us have this background that we have a strong support for the heroic Jewish people. And we didn't really understand the difference between the Jewish people and Judaism and the political line of Zionism. Well, that is another discussion. But to sum up, since 82, I have been working with a large number of medical projects, and I've been happy to work with a medical community for the Palestinians through many different situations.
Dr. Mads Gilbert, to take a look at some of the health and nutrition that standards that you've witnessed in Gaza and the challenges that children and adults face in Gaza. And I'll start off by correcting myself. Gaza is not a mile by 5 miles in size. It's roughly 5 miles wide by about 25 miles long at the border with Egypt along the Mediterranean Sea. Still a very densely populated space for 1.7 million people to inhabit. What sort of challenges do the people of Gaza face given the blockade against a lot of incoming supplies, and even given the challenges of meeting child nutritional needs and adult health needs?
Well, the fundamental problem for the Palestinian people is the Israeli occupation of Palestine. It is against international law. It is an illegal occupation, and it is very hard. For the last 5 years, Israel, supported by the U.S. government, has imposed a very strict siege and blockade of Gaza, and it's now 1.7 million inhabitants, meaning that food import is restricted. Import of any, building material, all the things you need for your daily life is restricted. Fuel, electricity, water conditions are very severe, 90% of the water being undrinkable. And this hits a population of 1.7 million people very hard, because the area accessible to agriculture and the fishing waters on the coastline of Gaza are also severely limited and being cut even more by the security zones that the Israeli government imposes on Gaza. So it is really impossible to have self-supplied nutritional industry, and it is impossible to have a national or a Palestinian economy, meaning that there is widespread poverty. 75% of the population is depending on aid from the UN to survive. A large number of people are unemployed because the 5 years of siege have denied them access to day work in Israel and the West Bank. And this is a very particular population, because almost 60% of these 1.7 million people are 18 years and below. The average age in Gaza is 17.8 years. Excuse me, 17.6 years, that is. And more than 1 million out of the 1.7 million are younger than 18 years. So it's basically the world's largest child prison. And within this very limited space, there is not enough food, and this has caused widespread anemia, lack of red blood cells, and it has caused widespread protein malnutrition, leading to stunting. And stunting is defined as a growth in length in children, which is below 2 standard deviations of the average height of a child at that age, meaning you are shorter than you should be because you have too little protein to eat, and your brain development is hampered by this protein deficiency. So this is a slow starvation of a whole population which is man-made and imposed by the occupants. And these numbers are not disputable. They are published in renowned medical journals like Lancet. And the research shows us that this health condition for a whole population is severely hampered and diminished by the consequences of the blockade. And of course, when you then have a bombardment causing a large number of injuries, also in children, you will have a very bad starting point to survive the injuries, both because your body is depleted of blood and proteins, and the risk is high that if you survive, you will have more infections and limited wound healing, worse than if you had a normal nutritional status. So the health condition in Gaza is very worrisome, and it could be reversed very simply by lifting the siege and allowing the people of Gaza normal life.
Dr. Mads Gilbert, you mentioned earlier that you had seen the cutting of some water supplies during the Israeli bombing of Lebanon decades ago. Is that something that you've seen affected, the water supplies in Gaza, by some of these military actions, by the Israeli military, the occupying power, affecting water supplies of these relatively poor people in Gaza?
They are not relatively poor. They are very poor, actually. It's an epidemic of poverty. And yes, during Operation Cast Lead, which started on the 27th of December 2008 and lasted for more than 3 weeks, there was systematic bombing of pipelines, water pipelines, and sewage systems. And adding bad to worse, or worse to bad, whatever you want, the import of spare parts and needed repair material for the sewage and water system has been severely delayed and hampered by the siege. So millions of tons of raw sewage is pumped into the Mediterranean, and as I said, due to contamination of the groundwater from the sewage in Gaza, the 90% of the water is undrinkable, and it also has a very high saline content. So all the fundamental determinants of population health are severely affected by the politics that the occupant is imposing on the people of Gaza. Now, this amounts undoubtedly to collective punishment of the population. They are not really hitting their military counterparts, that is the armed parts of the Palestinian society, but they are hitting hardest at the civilian population, which is against international law. Now, I don't support Hamas, I don't support Fatah, I don't support Jihad or PLO or any of the political faction. I support the Palestinian people and their right to international protection as a population, civilian population, and I support their right to independence and to have an independent Palestinian state.
Is it your sense that some of the ceasefire conditions included a relaxation of the restrictions that prevent supplies getting into Gaza?
Well, I've been in Gaza now during the bombing, so I haven't really been able to update myself on all the details in the ceasefire. But as far as I understand, the Israelis have not so far accepted to lift the siege of Gaza. That is one of the preconditions for the ceasefire. I understand that, but it remains to be seen if and how the Israeli occupation forces and the Israeli government will change their politics on the siege. One thing which is quite striking, I've been working many places in the south. I've been working in Burma, in Cambodia, in Angola, in Sri Lanka, with medical projects for less fortunate people. And in many places, like in Burma, we just saw the visit of your newly elected President Obama. They have managed to use international sanctions against a regime which has severely oppressed its people and its minorities in Burma. And finally, through economic sanctions, blockades, peaceful, internationally recognized political tools, they have been able to change. Why is it that Israeli government, and I underline the Israeli government, who is responsible not only for the military attacks on the people of Gaza, but also for this long-lasting siege and this illegal occupation, why is it that this government is exempted from all types of peaceful, legal, political pressure from the international community? Why is it that this impunity of the Israeli government is maintained through all these years of harsh occupation? I don't understand that, and I don't understand why the Israeli government is not treated as other governments and have to be accountable for their actions. There has been absolutely no international court trials after Operation Cast Lead, despite the fact that 1,400 Palestinians were killed and 5,400 were injured, the large majority of them being civilians. And we saw it now, the last week, 162 Palestinians killed in 1 week. 42 of these killed were children. I participated in the resuscitation of many of these children. Many of them died. And 1,200 Palestinians were injured in 1 week. Why is it that there is no international outcry? Whereas, of course, one life is one life. No Israelis should get killed. Of course not. But nor should any Palestinians get killed. And this inequality, this disproportionality in the use of arms and force, I think it's a huge moral and political challenge, not at least to the U.S. government and to the good people of the United States. I think, you know, you really have to challenge your government. Why are all these billions flowing into military aid for a state that is occupying another people in such a brutal way?
Dr. Mads Gilbert, I noticed there's a reporter in Beach Camp Gaza named Chris McGreal. He writes for The Guardian, and he's pointed out, he writes just recently, that the humanizing experiences of middle-aged Palestinians and Israelis who had contact in everyday situations have faded away and is now replaced by confrontation, trauma, and hatred. What do you see among the especially large young population of young people and children in Gaza, and how they see their prospects for the future, for their future economically and as a society and personally, and also just in their nations, Palestinian nations, unrecognized by the UN still, but their hope for future relations with their international neighbors?
You know, people are people. Good people are good people all over the world. And I have many, many good friends who are Jews. I have met a large number of progressive, liberal, independent Jews during my more than 8 speaking tours in the U.S. over the last 2 years. And I really admire them for their strength and their courage to speak up. I have many good friends among the Palestinians. And I had a long discussion yesterday with one of my young doctor friends, and he said, really, Dr. Mads, we want peace, just like the Israeli people want peace. But we cannot have peace without some sort of justice. We don't want to live as prisoners in our own land. We don't want to live with our heads bowed down for the occupant. We want independency and we want justice. And we'd rather die than live as prisoners in our own country. And I think that is the same as all people of the world who have been occupied and oppressed would say. And then they say, it's for us no future to yield to an occupant who treat us in a way that is so inhuman and that over so many years has fooled us into so many treaties and so many agreements that we could not uphold. So they want to see justice. Here comes some of my darling children of Dr. Khalil to greet me. They are my best friends. I just have to kiss them because they come to see me here in the Varna house. And these are absolutely adorable Palestinian children who have had nothing but occupation, bombing, siege, and fright throughout their life. Yet, they behave with dignity, with friendliness, with a great hospitality. And for me, I have one advice. If you want to know what's going on in Palestine, travel here. Don't believe my words. Take your time. 1 week in the West Bank, try to come to Gaza and see for yourself. And if you want to know what it means to be a human in difficult conditions, in really hellish conditions, come to Gaza and see what a man and a woman can be even in the hardest times. The Palestinian people behave, they stand strong, and they show us, I think, what humanity really is.
Dr. Mads Gilbert, have you been able to travel to Gaza freely? I've heard that not all Westerners or people or even Palestinians are always allowed to travel into Gaza. Is that your sense from being there yourself?
No, it's very difficult to come into Gaza from the Israeli side. You have to go through areas. There are only one entry and exit from the Israeli side and one in the south from the Egyptian side. I travel through Egypt and the border station at Rafah border. It is difficult. It's not difficult to travel to the West Bank, but listen, Gaza is completely under siege. The people of Gaza cannot travel outside Gaza. The border to Egypt has eased up a little bit after the regime change in Egypt, but the normal Palestinian cannot exit Gaza, not to have work in Israel or day work in Israel or in the West Bank, nor to travel abroad. So the large majority of the young people, they say they really long for the freedom to travel and to see the world, but they cannot because they don't have internationally acknowledged passports. 75% of the inhabitants in Gaza are, by definition, refugees. And, you know, it's really almost impossible to describe to you this absurdity of the situation in Gaza. 1.7 million people under the really roughest military regime you can imagine, with this state, the state of Israel, and its government calling itself the only democracy in the Middle East. Come on. If you're a democracy, you allow people to have human rights and treat them like yourselves. This is a huge apartheid system, and I will not rest until there is a political solution. There are no military solutions to the occupation of Palestine. There is only one solution, and that is a political negotiated fair solution for both parties. And that means to put an end to the siege of Gaza and to put an end to the occupation of Palestine. And I hope that the American people, the U.S. people, understand that you really have the key, because you are the greatest, the biggest, the most important, I should say, the most important pillar of support for the current Israeli politics in against the Palestinians. Without the change in U.S. foreign policy, Israel can remain assured that the billions will flow in for new weapons and that the occupation of Palestine will continue. But the good people of the United States can change that politics by forcing their political leaders to change their line on the state of Israel.
Well, Dr. Mads Gilbert, thank you so much for joining us today from Gaza City there in the Gaza Strip.
Thank you for having me, and I wish you all a peaceful weekend. Enjoy peace, enjoy freedom. Enjoy all those sides of life that the people of Gaza yet have only to dream about.
Thank you, Dr. Mads Gilbert. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm John Grebe.